Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The headline in The Atlantic reads, "The Trump administration sides with nurses who object to abortion. HHS says the University of Vermont Medical Center required staffers to violate their conscience. The case underscores Trump's religious freedom agenda." Well, how would you like to be a nurse? You have dedicated your life to the care and the health care of people who are in need and your patients, and you're told by the organization you work for that you have to participate in one form or another in the taking of an innocent human life. I can't think of any greater violation of conscience that there could be. We're going to be talking about this ruling from the Department of Health and Human Services in favor of the conscience rights of pro-life nurses. Nancy Valco joins us. She's a registered nurse for 50 years and a spokesperson for the National Association of Pro-Life Nurses. Nancy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. I'm happy to be here.
In your long career as a nurse, have you had the unfortunate opportunity to struggle with the issue of conscience in your line of work?
Yes, I have, more than once. But the biggest one was a few years ago when I was told to increase a morphine drip on a patient who wouldn't stop breathing after their ventilator was turned off. And I said, no, that's euthanasia. And it was a 72-year-old man who had had a routine surgery, had a problem after surgery, and I'm an ICU nurse, although I've worked everywhere. And we were able to save him. We had him on a ventilator, got him all stabilized. And when they're on the ventilator, we give them some relaxing medicine on purpose, you know, so they don't fight the ventilator. And he came back really well, and they turned off the sedation, and he didn't wake up within 24 hours. So they called in a neurologist who said, well, I think he's brain dead. And the nurse who told me that, I said, he's not brain dead. When he's off the ventilator, he breathes. It's crazy. And they said, well, close enough. So they talked to the family, took him off the ventilator. When I wasn't there, I came back that night, and he was off the ventilator, still breathing, still stable, with 30 milligrams of morphine dripping, and I was told to increase it until he stops breathing. And the nurse said, I wanted to protect you, so I just wrote, morphine for comfort, no limit. And, of course, I turned it off. And the respiratory therapist and I kept trying to wake him up because I said they didn't give him enough time. And I talked to the doctor who refused to get involved. I talked to the supervisors. I said, I can't do this. The other nurse didn't show up. There was no other ICU nurse. So I said no. And I left. And when I came back 2 days later, he was, of course, dead. I figured that. But I was called in the office, and they said, well, the doctor wants you terminated. I said, I followed procedure. I went up the chain of command. And they go, yeah, we know, and you're a good nurse. So how about if we just put a reprimand in your file? And I said, no. And I was a suddenly single parent of three young children and the sole support. And I said, no. And they said, okay, how about if we say we educated you on end-of-life issues? I said, I talk on that around the country. I lecture on end-of-life and ethics. And they said, well, just go. And it got around the hospital, and some people thought I was wrong. Some people thought I was right. But about a month later, some nurses came up from another floor, and they said, you made us think. We're always so busy. And they had a patient with a breathing problem, and the doctor ordered an enormous dose of morphine. And every nurse went up and said no to the doctor. You give it. He said, I'm not giving it. And they kept after these doctors, and the practice was ended. I had thought I was going to be harassed out of a job. I was very lucky. There was nowhere I could go. You can't call the cops. I went up the chain of command. So I am very, very happy with this change that we've had since the Trump administration decided to enforce it. It's not just about abortion.
So what can you tell us about this HHS ruling in defense of a nurse in Vermont?
Well, this is good. And this just came over the wire, kind of connected. This nurse in the University of Vermont Medical Center, she had said, I don't perform abortions, I don't participate in abortions. So they had a policy there. But they had recently changed it that if they were short-staffed. So they told her they wanted her to take care of this patient. This is according to the Atlantic magazine. And she found out it wasn't just a miscarriage, it was an elective abortion. And she says, no, I can't do that. And they said, well, you have to. And not wanting to be fired, she went ahead. But she got in touch with a pro-life legal firm, ACLJ, and the Trump administration, and they defended her, and it just came over the wire saying she had been completely vindicated. And that is a great thing. There are a lot of nurses, as the National Association of Pro-Life Nurses, where I'm the spokesperson, we get calls a lot, and I've gotten them for years, not only my things, but in other people and other nurses have called. And we don't have an American Nursing Association to stand up for us. They recently came out and actually dropped their opposition to assisted suicide. But they've never been there for us, which is a real shame. But they said since the Trump administration started this, which is just enforcing already existing regulations, it has caused a firestorm, both with the people for assisted suicide, Compassionate Choices, and Planned Parenthood. And as soon as they came up with the final rule on this, which was nothing different than what they did before, these were rules that had been there that were often just ignored, they started complaining and they said, no, you can't do this, and this is wrong to let people say no, and we have to take care of our patients and all sorts of stuff. And they even said there was a lawsuit filed almost immediately from San Francisco that said this will impact our LGBT patients, which is ridiculous. None of us would refuse to take care of a patient, but we object to a procedure or some sort of policy that would allow termination of human life.
How common is it, Nancy, that scenario that you lived through yourself, for the doctor to try and get a nurse to do something that he himself is unwilling to do when it comes to end of life or something like that?
We have a lot of that. I've always said, that one nurse said, well, I'm not really against assisted suicide. And I said, you want to be involved? And she goes, I wouldn't be involved. I said, nurses always have to do the dirty work. She said, well, you've got a point. And when Oregon passed the first assisted suicide law, a lot of hospice nurses quit. They were not told when a patient was taking an overdose. No one has to be there. These physician-assisted suicide laws are really dangerous. They've given people the idea that suicide is the solution. And my own daughter was a victim of the assisted suicide movement. She had struggled with substance abuse issues and suicidal thoughts for 16 of her 30 years when she told me she had read the book Final Exit by Derek Humphrey. She says, Mom, I know how to do it. And I talked to her. We got her into therapy right away. And then, unfortunately, a little while later, I got the phone call every parent dreads. And we thought it was an overdose. But what the detective said, the medical examiner said it was textbook Final Exit, the method she chose. And I went, what? And when I got the autopsy, I saw it. There were no drugs in her system, no alcohol. She had used a technique that Derek Humphrey described in his book, Final Exit. And we have seen the regular suicide rate go up astronomically since assisted suicide was legalized in Oregon. Before that, it was going down. Now we have an epidemic of suicides. And I consider my daughter one of the victims. She fell for it. She told me, I'm tired of being a burden on you. And that's one of the main complaints people give for having assisted suicide. Pain is not even among the top five. It's ridiculous. And I've been a hospice nurse, and I worked with the terminally ill. I was never once tempted to end one of my patients' lives. I fought for them, and I fought against policies that would hasten their death, like voluntary stopping of eating and drinking, and critical medications trying to speed things up. And I've worked with many, many suicidal people, some of whom were terminally ill, and the only person I ever lost was my own daughter. But because of her story, other people have turned around, and she wound up, her story has saved other lives.
This HHS ruling, as you mentioned before, really is just enforcing rules that were already in place. And the thing that kind of chills my blood a little bit, Nancy, is that if this is only being enforced under the Trump administration, when we no longer have a Trump administration, I imagine the doctors and administrators feel like they could just go back to ignoring the rule.
Well, that's what's so frightening about it. You know, if it depends on politics, we're in trouble. The great thing about the Trump HHS rule is it also has online a link, an email that people can put in, nurses and doctors or whoever can put in what their problem is. We haven't had that before. When I was almost terminated and knew I probably would be, it was very difficult. Where do you go? In the mid-70s, I called OSHA. We were trying to get a dangerous chemical out of our dialysis unit that we were exposed to and made it hard for us to breathe, and administration wouldn't do anything. And one of our nurses who had quit because she couldn't take it anymore called OSHA, and they said, well, you could be a disgruntled employee. So I stepped up to the bat, and I called, and I said, now, I want to be anonymous. I do not want this to be known. And they said, nope, we will tell your employer. This is what we had to deal with. This is a real problem. In fact, a nurse lawyer wrote an article recently, and she said when it comes to a safety problem or anything else, nurses are safer if they don't report it. Hospitals don't want problems. They don't want the bad publicity. Just let it go. That's really frightening. We need the average person to speak up. Like I tell people, I said, we nurses are a thin, white line. We are working with doctors on all ends of the ethics and competency spectrum. And we are there protecting our patients. And we're the ones who are in the line of fire, and we're the ones who are going to be fired. We're considered expendable. We can be fired for any or no reason at all. As I've told nurses, I said, read your handbook in your hospital. It's in there. They talk about drugs and everything else, and at the end they said anything the hospital considers detrimental. That's a problem. But what we're there is we're trying to protect our patients. And like Compassion and Choices has said, nurses like me who object to being involved should find another profession. And there is a real strong effort to get us out. Once they do, no one is safe. This is not just for nurses. This is for the protection of the American public and our healthcare system.
Nancy Valco is a registered nurse for 50 years, a spokesperson for the National Association of Pro-Life Nurses. You can find out more about their work and read Nancy's blog under the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Nancy, thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me.
After the break, we're going to be going through your email, that email address. Anytime you want to give us any feedback here at Issues, etc., talk back at issuesetc.org. And we'll also be responding to your comments on the Issues, etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.